You're listening to KSUT's Four Corners Edition. I'm Ken Brott. Colorado is a big step closer to having a new congressional map after a politically diverse committee agreed on a map late Tuesday night. KSUT's Mark Dugan explains.
The commission's plan calls for the new 8th Congressional House District to stretch from Greeley to North Denver. It also creates a map where Democrats and Republicans are favored to win 3 seats each, with the remaining 2 districts as toss-ups. Colorado Capitol Coverage reporter Scott Franz caught up with Lori Schell, an unaffiliated redistricting commissioner from Durango.
We have changed the course of congressional redistricting in Colorado and provided an example for the rest of the country.
This is the first time an independent commission has led redistricting efforts in Colorado. Voters approved a 2018 ballot measure to form the commission with the aim of preventing political influences at the state capitol. I'm Mark Dugan for KSUT.
At this time last year, firefighters were just over a month into fighting the Cameron Peak wildfire in northern Colorado. At more than 208,000 acres, it's the largest fire in state history, and full containment didn't come until December. As KUNC's Alex Hager reports, for the people in charge of protecting the area's water, the work is only getting started.
Randy Gustafson is watching helicopters zip back and forth over the Cameron Peak burn scar.
They're hooking the net back up. And in a matter of seconds, he's up and out.
Instead of scooping up water to drop on flames, the pilots are picking up bulging nets full of wood mulch to scatter over the charred hillsides from the 2020 fire.
I'm kind of used to it, and it's just the kid in you comes out watching this.
Gustafson works for the city of Greeley. And even though Greeley is a 2-hour drive away, this is where the city's water comes from. Snowmelt and rain make their way down from the foothills into the Cashlapoota River before that water is piped over to the city. But when that rain falls on a burn scar,
it's like a frying pan. It's slick. The water will run. As the water runs off of it, it'll collect. As it collects debris, everything else, it just builds up onto itself moving through there. So what this does is it'll set down and stabilize the soil.
These golden shards of wood, about 3 inches long, they help hold that dirt in place and keep it out of the runoff. And they're just one part of the city's strategy to keep the water clean. Another effort is underway above Chambers Lake, where the fire started. Big bundles of spongy wood shavings, held together by biodegradable nets, are laid out on the hillside.
They form a baffle, and they stop. They collect, as you can see right here, the debris, soil, ash, and keep it from coming down directly into the reservoir.
Right now, they are holding back sludgy piles of gray dirt in one of the most severely burned parts of the Cameron Peak fire.
This makes it worth it. This makes what we're doing worth it. I mean, this is a microscopic portion of what we have, but it worked, and it stopped the bleeding. And it's, yeah, this does. This gets me amped up.
But in the grand scheme of things, all this work could just be a Band-Aid, with climate change making things worse.
These mega fires, unfortunately, are not going to be going anywhere anytime soon.
Hallie Strevey directs the Coalition for the Poudre River Watershed. She says that means a lot more work for recovery and prevention around this fire and others like it across the West.
You know, we're trying not to lose hope. I think there's still plenty of things that we can do working together collaboratively.
That includes precautionary forest management in areas prone to burn. And the fact that it's carried out by a watershed group is just more proof of how connected this all is. Even after a fire burns, it takes a lot of work to keep the water clean. But a restoration project like this one is not cheap. Keeping just one helicopter in the air costs $87 every minute. And this work has been going on for months. Greeley's deputy water director, Adam Jokerst, says it's worth it for 2 reasons.
One is to protect the public. Mulching and other erosion control structures reduce flooding and protect life and property. And the second reason is water quality. How much is clean, pure mountain water worth?
Jokerst said Greeley gets the best bang for its buck from aerial mulching, but they might not have enough money to cover as many acres as they'd like to.
What's most critical for us right now is lack of funding. We're spending roughly $300,000 a day. So we go through funding very quickly.
And with a long list of tasks to protect more of the watershed, Jokerst says they could use more help, whether that's from the state or from federal infrastructure spending. And he'd like to see more permanent funds set aside for this type of work. Randy Gustafson would too, especially since fires like this are getting stronger and more frequent.
The last 10 years, I've had two major fires, and both of them are the most severe fires we've had. This is the biggest fire in Colorado. And yeah, this is not, and this, I see this as continuing until the forests are completely, we have nothing left to burn.
Greeley's water team says restoration work will carry into the next few years, but because of the size and severity of the burn, it'll never truly be fixed. Alex Hager, KUNC.
Non-human creatures are also playing a role in preventing the worst effects of the Cameron Peak fire. Find that story and the one you just heard at ksut.org. Have you noticed how plastic food packaging seems to have increased over the course of the pandemic? A new grocery store in Boulder is trying to make the case that all that packaging isn't necessary. Nude Foods is piloting a model to make grocery shopping a waste-free experience. KGNU's Shannon Young dropped by their brand new location to check it out.
So we have Choco Nut Keto Donuts, we have fresh spaghetti that's frozen, we have some Kung Pao Chicken Rice Bundles.
The somewhat unusual selection in the refrigerated section isn't the only thing that's unconventional about the Nude Foods grocery store.
We are like a traditional grocery store, just without the packaging.
That's store manager Nina Rowan.
Everything is, we get very minimal packaging or no packaging at all, and we do all the work for you. So we try to make sustainability as accessible as possible, as quick and easy as possible, even for beginners.
So what we would normally see at a conventional supermarket, mm-hmm. as far as dried fruits, vinegars, oils, honey, all that, you would usually see this bright, colorful packaging in plastic. A lot of times it's not recyclable. Or you'll have honey in PET containers. Mm-hmm. What is everything in here?
In glass jars.
Do people recycle them, or what happens with them?
So they will bring this home, use it up, bring it back whenever it's convenient for them. We wash it, we sanitize it, and then we reuse it. So no recycling goes on. This is a cyclical process. These jars will be reused until the end of their lifetime.
You have not only the glass jars that we've just seen, mm-hmm. but also, what are these other packages?
So we have cloth bread bags that we put our bread bags in, so there's no plastic involved in that. And same with our eggs. We have hard plastic egg containers that we will wash and sanitize just like everything else and reuse. Same with towels. We'll put our produce in those so they don't get damaged. Of course, we'll wash and reuse those. And then same with the cloth tote bags. When we do deliveries, we put our glass refrigerated items in those just to make sure they don't get damaged. But absolutely everything is plastic free, reused forever.
Produce. Where does this produce come from?
So all of this produce is local. The majority of this produce is rescued, so we call it seconds. So it's produce that would otherwise have been thrown away. It's imperfect, but still perfectly fine to consume. And we sell it for budget, for less than it would be sold traditionally. So, and it gets a second life. So it's not in the landfill. It's going to be hopefully eaten by folks and used up.
Nude Foods opened a brick and mortar location on Walnut Street in Boulder a few days ago. And while the pandemic visibly increased plastic packaging of food, co-founder Verity Noble says plans for a zero waste grocery store predate the coronavirus.
The pandemic had a huge effect on the path we took. The four of us kind of got together at the end of 2019, and we planned to open a physical store in 2020. And then the pandemic hit, and we had a meeting. We were like, what should we do? Should we just put this off until this thing blows over? And we said, no, let's pivot and let's move to a delivery and pickup model. So we then piloted that. And honestly, the pandemic, I guess, was very good for us in that that was a very low-cost, low-risk way to start.
How do bikes fit into this business model?
Well, when we do our deliveries, most of our deliveries are done by bike. So we have a lot of bikers who come and they pick up the boxes and they deliver it to people's doors by bike. And if we do supplement now with electric vehicles as well, because the number of orders has just got so high that we would need a kind of fleet of 100 bikers to get it all out there. So we do have electric vehicles because obviously they're a lot faster and they can hold a lot more than an individual biker. Plus, when it snows, we use electric vehicles.
What other ways other than packaging are you employing to minimize your footprint?
Sure, you might feel it's maybe a little warmer in here than a standard grocery store. We don't have air conditioning. We have a swamp cooler, which we only run when we have to. So that was a decision of ours to not employ air conditioning, which is pretty terrible for the environment. And then in terms of other things, I mean, most of us bike to work. That's my bike outside. Most of us bike to work. We, you know, out the back, everything is very zero waste. You know, we make lunch out of anything that is not good enough to go to customers. So the whole team has lunch together. We started to label our products, and those labels are ones that are reusable. They will stay on the jars for multiple washes. So that's where there's not single use. Any of our promotional material is all printed with soy inks on recycled paper. So every opportunity we get, really, it's making the kind of the environmental choice.
Did you find yourself spending many extra hours doing research and sourcing materials?
Oh, yes. There are so many things that we had crazy weeks of conversations about. So, for example, we wanted to get branded boxes to deliver our groceries in. And we went back and forth about building, you know, we did prototypes of collapsible wooden boxes that we built ourselves. We used cardboard boxes from, you know, the first year. We used all these different things, and eventually we have settled on 100% recycled plastic containers. Because these are longer term use. They can actually, you know, they last really well. They're 100% recycled, and, you know, they look great. And we want to make sure that we're striking this right balance between being crunchy, as it were, you know, but equally being really approachable to mainstream.
That was Nude Foods' zero waste grocery store co-founder, Verity Noble. And before her, store manager, Nina Rowan.
That's Shannon Young reporting from Boulder for the Rocky Mountain Community Radio Coalition. KSUT's Four Corners Edition continues in a moment with Senator Michael Bennett talking infrastructure and drought. That's next.
Four Corners Edition is brought to you by Spine Colorado and listeners like you.
This is Four Corners Edition on KSUT. Help us continue to cover the region, the state, and beyond by supporting KSUT. Your donation makes local and regional news coverage possible. Become a sustaining member or make a one-time donation at ksut.org. Just click on the orange donate button to get started. Imagine turning 18 and finding yourself aged out of the foster care system. You don't have the resources to support yourself and now face homelessness. There's a program in Montrose aimed at helping youth in this situation. As Laura Palmisano reports for KVNF and Rocky Mountain Community Radio, the program provides affordable housing along with support and guidance.
Yeah, I like that too.
Once a week, the residents of First Place on 2nd Street in Montrose gather in the community room. They share a meal and catch up with each other and with staff from CASA of the 7th Judicial District. Today, one of the residents is making lunch for the group.
It's just going to be just a nice blush vodka sauce with bucatini pasta.
CASA is an area nonprofit that serves children and families who've experienced abuse and neglect. The nonprofit owns First Place on 2nd Street. It's an 8-unit housing complex for youth ages 18 to 24 who've aged out of the foster care system or are at risk for becoming homeless. Carlton Mason is the executive director of CASA.
If a young person turns 18 and they don't have family support, there are not many options.
Mason says the complex can house up to 12 young adults at a time.
And I'll be honest with you, when a young person moves in, the first 10 to 12 months is very chaotic. It's young people struggling with adulting. But over time, that transitions to where these young people begin to look for jobs and begin to think about the future.
He says CASA provides more than just housing for residents of First Place. They're also there to help navigate life challenges, such as getting a driver's license, a degree, or a job.
We also have expanded into providing mental health services. We have 2 therapists on staff.
Rent at First Place is covered by state housing vouchers. Unless a resident works, then 30% of their income goes towards rent. 18-year-old Keegan McCorkle lived in foster care most of his life. He graduated from high school in January and moved into the micro-housing community in March. He says it provides him with an affordable place to live.
It's really hard to find anywhere to live that's cheap, especially on minimum wage. For single rooms here in Montrose, it was around maybe $300 to $500 a month, just for a room. For apartments, it was $950 up, and here I pay $371 for a whole apartment.
McCorkle says living at CASA's facility also feels safe.
And here you feel comfortable. It's like a kind of small sense of community. We're all around the same age. It's just easier to get along.
First Place on 2nd Street opened in 2018. A mixture of state and local funding paid for it. The Colorado Division of Housing, or DOH, awarded CASA $500,000 toward the project. It was the first such housing project for youth ages 18 to 24 aging out of foster care or facing homelessness in the state. Zach Schaffner is a supportive housing services manager with DOH.
So we've learned a great deal from First Place on 2nd Street, the focus on elements like harm reduction and trauma-informed care and really providing those low barriers and flexible supports. We've really seen the success of that intervention and that approach at First Place on 2nd Street.
Schaffner says DOH also learned important design elements for future developments. First Place on 2nd Street is a mix of 4 one-bedroom units and 4 two-bedroom units. He says the two-bedroom units were intended for siblings or young couples with a child, but there was a greater need for single individuals.
Really, to the extent possible, we look for single and one-bedroom units. We've seen that that can be effective, that can reduce some of those interpersonal conflicts that can occur with roommate situations when we're working with a population that has some complex histories of trauma.
He says supportive housing, like First Place on 2nd Street, is an effective way to serve the needs of young adults experiencing homelessness or exiting the foster care system. The Colorado Division of Housing has funded similar projects in Boulder, Broomfield, Delta, and Grand Junction. And Schaffner says DOH is working to bring more supportive housing to the state. The project in Delta is the latest effort from CASA. It's under construction now and scheduled to open in December. It will house 6 youth in one-bedroom suites. Carlton Mason says CASA is expanding because there's a need.
The cost of living is just too high for a young person to kind of transition from nothing to all of a sudden having the income to sustain a place to live.
On average, more than 200 young people age out of the foster care system every year in Colorado. National data shows about 20% of these youth find themselves homeless when they turn 18. Mason says CASA can't house every young adult seeking its services. It just doesn't have the resources. But the difference they make is one small part of solving the affordable housing crisis. Reporting from Montrose, I'm Laura Palmisano.
This story is part of a collaboration between Rocky Mountain Community Radio and the Solutions Journalism Network. Reports will highlight housing solutions across the Mountain West. Listen throughout the fall for more stories from our partner stations, including KSUT. As the U.S. Senate voted to avoid a government shutdown Thursday, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said she'll move forward with a vote on the president's $1 trillion infrastructure bill. KSUT's Sarah Flower spoke with Colorado Senator Michael Bennett about what's included in the infrastructure bill and how it could affect Southwest Colorado.
Senator Bennett, thanks for joining us here today.
Thanks so much for having me.
What's made headlines recently is your visit with Senator Mitt Romney and floating down the Colorado River. It almost sounds like it could be a punchline, Senator Bennett, that a Republican and Democrat get in a raft. I don't know the end of that joke, but there's one in there somewhere.
I got to think of one. There was a day this summer, I hate to say this, but it's true, when the
Northern Utah and Denver, Colorado had the worst air quality on planet Earth, worse than Beijing, worse than any other place in the world. And that's the result, obviously, of the fires in California and a result of climate change. And I saw Mitt Romney on the floor and I said, hey, maybe we ought to go spend some time on the Colorado River talking about climate and talking about water and forestry. And he agreed to do it. Originally, we were going to do it half in Colorado and half in Utah, but we ended up, Susan, my wife, and I went out and met Ann and Mitt Romney in Moab, and we spent 6 hours together. But we had about 15 people from Colorado and 15 people or so from Utah having a really good conversation that I hope will lead to some bipartisan work around climate change and resiliency and forestry. Unfortunately, the punchline of that joke probably has to do with how little water is in the Colorado River, which is running at half its regular rate.
You have been no stranger to this area here recently, Senator Bennett. I want you to kind of touch on and let our listeners know today, what are some of the issues that you are seeing from the constituents here in Southwest Colorado in your recent visits?
Well, climate change, which we were just talking about, is one, you know, deep concern about the condition of our forests. You know, I think, Sarah, you and I might have been together when I was visiting Durango to have a conversation with people about the cohesive regional plan people are working on, you know, with respect to mitigating, protecting us against fire and doing forest mitigation, watershed protection, which I think is so vital for the western slope of Colorado. I visited Fort Lewis College down there. I met with President Tom Stridicus on a walking tour of the campus that ended up with a visit to the clock tower at the heart of campus to learn about the recent removal of historical interpretation plaques that misrepresented the true history of indigenous people's experience of Fort Lewis when it was a boarding school. And, you know, as you may know, Secretary Holland is taking a hard look at the federal Indian boarding school program and its history, which is, I think, an important thing to do because we've got to teach our students a more robust and accurate indigenized curriculum. And then I'd say infrastructure, I hear about all the time when I'm in Southwest Colorado, both in terms of the conditions of roads, but also concerns about the lack of broadband. And those are both things we're trying to address in the bipartisan infrastructure bill and the reconciliation package.
When we had last spoke to, we had sort of touched on this clean water provisions for tribes throughout the region when you speak of infrastructure as part of that bill. Is there an update on what that looks like?
We're fighting for billions of dollars in for clean water for tribes. The bills that we're considering right now include a fair amount of funding for water infrastructure for tribal communities that is entirely consistent with my Tribal Access to Clean Water Act, which is a bill that I introduced with Martin Heinrich, who's a senator from New Mexico, and John Hickenlooper and Elizabeth Warren are both on those bills. And so there's no update except that it's still alive. We just have to get it over the finish line, and it's really important for us to do it. You know, in some areas of the Ute Mountain Ute Reservation, it's customary to bring bottled water as a greeting gift because clean water is not otherwise available. And this investment would be the first step to reduce this shameful disparity and help ensure that tribal communities have access to safe, clean water.
What does that hill look like to get, as you mentioned, get over that hump? How do we do that?
Well, it's a challenge because we've got two pieces of legislation that are sort of traveling together. One is the bipartisan infrastructure bill. The other is a reconciliation bill. The big distinction between the two bills is that in one of them, we're going to reverse the Trump tax cuts for the wealthiest people in America, the largest corporations, reverse some of those cuts in order to pay for it. And there are just some people in Washington that are unwilling to do that. I think that after, you know, decades of cutting taxes for the wealthiest people in the country by trillions of dollars, and we're at a moment now when we've got to invest in Americans, we got to invest in the United States, in our infrastructure, in our broadband, in our people, that it's appropriate to reverse some of those tax cuts for the wealthiest folks. And and use it to fund these important projects for Southwest Colorado and all across the country.
I'd be remiss if I had you on the line and did not talk about the child tax credit, which you have been very passionate about in moving forward. And as of this week, there was some criticism of CTC from the Wall Street Journal and their editorial board criticizing this expansion. Senator Bennett, what is your rebuttal to that?
My rebuttal is they have their facts wrong. You know, they suggest that if the child tax credit is going to make it less likely for people to work, that's not true. It's countries that have a child allowance, like the child tax credit, they actually have higher workforce participation rates than we do in our country. And that just makes sense because people are able to have a little bit of help to pay their rent or to pay for some child care so that they can stay on the job, fix a broken car. I mean, these are all the kinds of things that are available to people to do it. And I also think that they also said that, well, this will cost $1 trillion over 10 years. And I pointed out in my letter to the editor back to the journal that childhood poverty costs this country, the cost of mitigating childhood poverty is a lot higher than the cost of trying to reduce it. I think we should end childhood poverty in this country, but this is a good start. It's cutting childhood poverty in America by almost half this year. 90% of the kids in Colorado are going to benefit from the credit. And I think after years and years and years of an economy that's worked really well for the top 10% and not for anybody else, and in Washington that's spent its time cutting taxes for the wealthiest people in the country, as I said earlier, that it's high time that we actually make an investment in our kids and in our working families. And that's what the child tax credit represents. You know, some people are surprised to know that the United States of America has one of the highest childhood poverty rates in the world. We are 38th in the industrialized world. We're 38th out of 41 countries. We're right at the bottom of the barrel. And the poorest population in the United States are our children. And as a former school superintendent in Denver, where I saw families working and working and working to try to pay their bills, to try to pay their rent, I know it's not because people aren't working. I know it's because, unfortunately, in this country, people can work full-time jobs and still not be able to support a family. And we've got to address that in fundamental ways in our economy, but this is a way of at least giving people a little bit of help along the way.
From Washington, D.C., Colorado Senator Michael Bennett, thanks so much for joining us here today on KSUT.
And now, here's a new recurring feature on KSUT called the Green Review.
Generating resilience environmentally, ecologically, naturally, green.
With winter quickly approaching, insulation options may not only help your comfort level, but also your pocketbook. Welcome to the Green Review. I'm your host, Shalina Luna. Today we talk to Stephen Fuchs, who headed the New Zealand Wool Testing Authority in research and development.
There is a greater need for clean air and utilizing the best form of insulation possible.
Not only does wool clean the air by absorbing chemicals, but it's also breathable, allowing the moisture to be released. Here's Stephen with more.
Wool naturally absorbs about a third of its own weight in moisture and remains dry because it's taking it into the center of the fiber. There's five layers in a fiber. At about 65% relative humidity, above that, it starts absorbing the moisture. And as the relative humidity drops below 65%, it releases that into the atmosphere. The consequence of that is not only keeping a relatively balanced moisture content, it also keeps a relatively balanced temperature because temperature is affected largely by moisture. It is a real feature of wool.
For a full interview with Stephen Fuchs, along with resource links, visit us at thegreenreview.solutions.
This is Four Corners Edition, a presentation of KSUT Four Corners Public Radio and KSUT Tribal Radio. The production staff includes Mark Dugan, Stasia Lanier, Sarah Flower, and Lorena Richards. Our theme music was composed and performed by Jonas Grushkin. New episodes air Friday mornings at 8:30. They're also archived at ksut.org. And coming soon, Four Corners Edition will be available as a podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Ken Brott.
Four Corners Edition is brought to you by Spine Colorado and listeners like you.